This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hey, it's Rich. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of The Zioli Show. Do us a favor, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and tell your friends. Come on, I got kids to feed. College isn't going to pay for itself, you know? Thanks for listening.
Rich Zioli Show Podcast.
Oh, the Democrats are playing funny business over in New Jersey with regards to redistricting. The president defends himself against Michael Cohen's crimes and the police setting up undercover sting operations to make sure your Amazon packages are safe. President today went on with Harris Faulkner at Fox News, and they had a conversation about a number of different things. I want to play for you some of this. Again, I opened the show with this earlier today. James Comey set up Michael Flynn for a trap. Michael Flynn, of course, a decorated, you know, military general, and he becomes the president's national security advisor. In December, as the incoming national security advisor, he has a conversation with the Russian guy, Sergei Kislyak. And he doesn't tell the truth to the FBI agents about this. And, you know, my argument would have been, well, I'm the NSA director. You guys are FBI agents. Get the hell out of the White House. Well, you never told us this was a criminal matter. They didn't. And Comey admits that. And he also admits that he never went the proper protocol, which is to go to the White House counsel and tell them they wanted to talk. But everybody's focusing on Michael Cohen today. And the president was asked a lot of questions on Fox News. I'm going to play a couple things for you. I'm also going to mention why some people think that he shouldn't have said one particular thing about Michael Cohen, which I'll also discuss as well. But president sat down with Harris Faulkner. Let me play for you. Let's start now with cut number eight, discussing how Michael Cohen was a disgraced lawyer.
What he did was all unrelated to me, except for the two campaign finance charges that are not criminal and shouldn't have been on there. They put that on to embarrass me. They put those two charges on to embarrass me. They're not criminal charges, number one. Now, that's according, Harris, that's according to the top.
And I've interviewed people who've told me this.
They're not criminal.
So
what happened is either Cohen or the prosecutors, in order to embarrass me, said, listen, I'm making this deal for reduced time and everything else. Do me a favor. Put these two charges on. They're not
right.
Criminal charges.
I want to move on.
And they weren't
this
for President Obama either.
I have one last question. Michael Cohen says that he lied in order to protect you.
Yeah.
What's your response to that?
Let me tell you, I never directed him to do anything wrong. Whatever he did on his own. He's a lawyer. A lawyer who represents a client is supposed to do the right thing. That's why you pay them a lot of money, et cetera, et cetera. He is a lawyer. He represents a client. I never directed him to do anything incorrect or wrong. And he understands that. Look, he did some bad things unrelated to me, maybe related to his other clients. I wasn't his only client. He had other clients. He did some bad things. And income tax evasion, I heard about taxicab, I heard about a lot of things. Now, I'm not reading about any of that stuff because what he did is he made a deal to embarrass me. In order to embarrass me, they cut his term down. Pretty terrible stuff.
Now, some people have said today that Trump should have said that Michael Cohen was not a disgrace as a lawyer, and he took his advice. You know, he took his legal advice. So whatever regards to payments, he took Cohen's advice, and that's the way it is. You know what's going to come down to this question? Because I've been asked this question before. I said, if Michael Cohen gave him advice and the president took that legal advice, why is he in any jeopardy? Right? Why? Why is he in any jeopardy? And it's a great question. Cohen's argument is, no, he knew what we were doing. And now they're saying today, the president was in the room with the National Enquirer and Michael Cohen and somebody else, and they were talking about payments to these women. All right, let's assume that's true. It doesn't mean then that it's a campaign violation. So then the question then becomes, if it was a campaign violation, then is that an impeachable offense? I still say no. The president talked about that with Harris Faulkner as well. We don't have any other clips on that, Greg, do we?
No.
Okay. President also mentioned that with Harris Faulkner as well today. He was asked a question of whether or not this was a campaign violation. And he said, no, it wasn't. But even if it was, Obama had a massive fine. And that's all it was. Just civil matter is a fine. He paid a fine. He said, they're only going after me because I'm Donald Trump. And that's why they're going after me. Then he was also asked a question today by Harris Faulkner about whether or not Michael Cohen ever directed him to do anything illegal. And, of course, from the president's perspective, the answer to that, of course, would be no, because you didn't know anything that was illegal. You wouldn't have done anything that your attorney said that was knowingly illegal. Some people over at Fox News would like to suggest today that the president has now admitted that he was lying. Somebody sent me a tweet earlier today Sean sent this with regards to Chris Wallace, who claimed doubt that Trump never directed Cohen to make the payments to women, implying he broke the law because of that. Now, the president says he never directed Cohen to break the law. The president says that these payments did not constitute campaign expenses. So it's really going to come down to a question. Say it becomes a legal matter. Say it ever becomes an indictable offense. Did you have a conversation that this was a campaign matter, right? President says prosecutors are trying to embarrass me. They want to embarrass Trump, he says. Were you ever told this was a campaign matter? Did you guys ever discuss this as a campaign matter? Any of those things? And they'll argue that if the answer was yes, then Trump should have paid this out of campaign funds. But again, I keep coming back to the question. Let's say in that conversation they said, you know what? This is really going to benefit you as president. So why don't we write a campaign check, call up the treasurer of the campaign, have him issue a check to Stormy Daniels from Trump for America, whatever the campaign account was called, have it sent to her, and end of the story. I don't want to be in a position where people say this benefited me personally. The conversation right now we would be having is this. Do you really think it was appropriate to pay a woman who alleges you had an affair with her out of campaign funds and not your own personal funds, that not your own personal money? I mean, considering that you did largely self-finance your campaign, but you also took donations from people. So do you really think that that's why they were giving money to your campaign, thinking that you'd pay off a woman, you'd silence her? That's exactly what they would be saying right now. And they'd be trying to say that by doing so, he broke federal law, because clearly under federal campaign law, there's a part in there where it says if it's a personal expense, you can't use campaign funds. Alan Dershowitz, who's very, very good, and he's a very smart lawyer, and he's one of the last few true civil libertarians in the world left. He was on Fox News last night on America's Newsroom. And this is what he had to say. Cut six.
He said it's hard to impeach somebody who hasn't done anything wrong and has created the greatest economy in the history of our country. I'm not concerned. No, I think that the people would revolt if that happened. You wrote the book on that. What did you think when you heard that comment, sir?
Well, first of all, it's not going to happen. The president's not going to be impeached unless massive new information comes out. I suspect the special counsel report will include lots and lots of sins based on political and based on circumstantial evidence, but I don't think he's going to come up with an impeachable offense. Remember, the Constitution requires treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors. The most they've come up with is a very, very questionable campaign contribution issue, which failed when they tried it against Edwards some years ago. So I don't think we're in impeachment land. I also don't think presidents ought to be...
Stop it, by the way, for a second, Greg, if you would. Dershowitz is talking about there with regards to John Edwards, remember, and this is a very important point. When John Edwards paid Rielle Hunter for her silence using money that was raised by donors and given to him for the purposes of silencing her, the Federal Election Commission said that was not a campaign expense, right? Even though it was other people's money, it was not a campaign expense. Even though it was donors, it still was not a campaign expense. Therefore, he did not do anything wrong. That was the Federal Election Commission that made that ruling. John Edwards paid Rielle Hunter for her silence, and yes, it was money that he technically raised, but it was not raised for political purposes. I can give you money to go do something. You know, say you owe money at, you know, Parks Casino. You owe them some money or something. I give you money to go pay it, and you're also running for office. And am I a donor who's given you money that should have been declared in your campaign form? No, it has nothing to do with your campaign, except you could argue, yeah, but you don't want the person, you don't want people finding out he's got gambling debts. So it actually is a campaign expense. FEC says, no, look, these have to be very clear. It's got to directly benefit the campaign and only the campaign. You can't get into buying suits and houses and cars because it makes you look good. You know, I gotta have a Maserati so I look successful. No, no, no. Edwards was charged with a crime because they said, the government, the Justice Department said, no, those are campaign expenses. You broke federal law. Goes to trial. He's acquitted on one count, hung jury on the other counts. That's what Dershowitz is talking about. And so, again, I say to you that if Donald Trump directed these payments, it doesn't matter because he didn't break federal campaign finance law, because the Federal Election Commission already ruled on this point with John Edwards and said it's not a campaign expense. Silencing your gumata is not a campaign expense. All right, keep going.
Edwards, some years ago. So I don't think we're in impeachment land. I also don't think presidents ought to be suggesting any kind of non-legal response to impeachment. If he were to be impeached and removed lawfully, which I don't think is possible, the rule of law has to apply and the people would have to accept that result. Now, the interesting issue, if he were impeached on grounds that were not constitutional and removed, and he challenged that and took it, for example, to the Supreme Court. In my book, I spell out that possible scenario and whether the president would accept the verdict of the Supreme Court, even if he didn't accept the verdict of the Senate and the House of Representatives. Interesting hypothetical of the kind I would present to my law students at Harvard, but it's not going to happen in real life.
All right. Now, Adam Schiff sees it differently, by the way. He thinks now that the president is in not only an impeachment land, but also an indictment land. So on Wednesday's broadcast of CNN's Situation Room, this guy's going to be the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. So this is significant now. I am often asked, you know, why do you play these clips? Well, I play them because, A, they're idiots, and B, it's fun. But C, this guy's going to be the chairman of a committee with a lot of power and subpoena power. And you got to hear what they're talking about here. Cut 7.
You know, and I would say this on that statute of limitations question that you mentioned, Wolf, and that is, I think the Justice Department needs to re-examine that OLC opinion, Office of Legal Counsel opinion, that you cannot indict a sitting president under circumstances in which the failure to do so may mean that person escapes justice. Because if it were the case that it was now or never, that if you wait until after the president leaves office, they can no longer be brought to justice, that ought to create certainly an exception to that OLC rule, if not mean revisiting and revising the rule altogether.
So am I hearing you correctly? You say indict him now and maybe try him after he leaves office? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, what I'm saying, Wolf, is I don't think that the Justice Department ought to take the position, and it's certainly not one that would be required in any way by the Constitution, that a president merely by being in office can be above the law, can escape the enforcement of the law by essentially waiting out the law, by waiting out the statute of limitations. So there ought to be a mechanism to make sure that that is not the case, whether that means revisiting the OLC opinion that and allowing the indictment of a sitting president and staying the prosecution, or allowing both the indictment and prosecution. But I think those issues may be foursquare before the Justice Department.
Now, ask yourself this question. If they had evidence the president has committed a crime and the statute of limitations was going to expire in 2 years, do you think that it would be reasonable to say that you couldn't indict him as president and the statute of limitations would not apply to him? Because that's the compelling theory from the Justice Department, that you'd then go before a judge and you'd say, well, Your Honor, we don't count that time against the statute of limitations because he was the president and we couldn't indict him. See, Adam Schiff knows that. Look, the reason why they want him indicted now is not because of the statute of limitations. Nobody thinks that. The reason why they want to indict him now is because they want the president to be indicted, because they think if they indict him, it'll somehow be the end of his political career, it'll be the end of his presidency, and on, etc. That's why they want him indicted. He's lying here. The Justice Department talked about that in their memo. In their memo, they discussed that, precisely that. A president can be tried for crimes when he leaves office. The statute of limitations would not apply because the time in which he's president would not count against that, obviously. But you see, they want to trick everybody into thinking, well, it's either now or never, or he escapes the statute of limitations. No, he doesn't, you big dope. And if you indict him when he leaves office and then he were to file something saying the statute of limitations has expired, it would go to a judge. But Adam Schiff thinks that indicting him is the way out for him And it's not. It's also not going to happen, by the way. But anyway, that's Justice Department memos from the Nixon years, the Clinton years, and they're pretty consistent on that point. Presidents can't be indicted while they are in office. Let me share this with you. Wall Street Journal opinion by the editorial board. The Flynn entrapment. Yeah, he was entrapped. Exactly right. Entrapment. I will share that with you. And I also want to mention to you, welcome back to the show, 855-839-1210. Glad you're here. Always appreciate it very, very much. And, of course, you should subscribe to the podcast, because you'll never miss a moment of the show. Of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's many targets, the most tragic may be former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. The former three-star general pleaded guilty last year to a single count of lying to the FBI about conversations he had with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. Now we learn from Mr. Flynn's court filing to the sentencing judge that senior bureau officials acted in a way that set him up for the fall. Not a rich man after decades in uniform, Mr. Flynn pleaded guilty to avoid bankruptcy and spare his son from becoming a legal target. Mr. Flynn's filing doesn't take issue with the description of his offense, but the additional facts the Flynn's defense team flags for the court raises doubts about the FBI's conduct. Let me just say, by the way, for the record, I was asked, could the judge throw this out? Absolutely he could. The judge has a job to do here. The judge has to ensure that Michael Flynn's constitutional rights have not been abused. Right? That's the judge's job in this. And if the judge has reason to believe that his rights have been abused by the government, then he 100% should throw the case out. Or reject the plea. Or reject sentencing. Or any of a number of different matters he could do. The Flynn filing describes government documents concerning the January 24th, 2017 meeting. Two FBI agents, when Michael Flynn supposedly lied. Turns out the meeting was set up by then-Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who personally called Mr. Flynn that day on other business to discuss an FBI training session. But by Mr. McCabe's account, on the call he told Mr. Flynn he felt that we needed to have two of our agents sit down with him to talk about his Russia communications. Mr. McCabe then urged Mr. Flynn to meet without a lawyer present. Quote, I explained that I thought the quickest way to get this done was to have a conversation between Flynn and the agents only. I further stated that if Lieutenant General Flynn wished to include anyone else in the meeting, like the White House counsel, for instance, that I would need to involve the Department of Justice. Mr. Flynn said that would not be necessary and agreed to meet with the agents without any additional participants. According to FBI summary of the interview, known as a 302, Mr. McCabe and FBI officials decided the agents would not warn Flynn that it was a crime to lie during an FBI interview because they wanted Flynn to be relaxed and they were concerned that giving the warnings might adversely affect the rapport. Now, let me stop this for a moment and point out why this is so significant. Michael Flynn, as the National Security Advisor, is part of the executive branch of government. The FBI, part of the executive branch of government. It is completely reasonable that the FBI would talk to the NSA, right? Completely reasonable. Completely reasonable they would come to the White House and talk to him. Even about his own Russian communications. It doesn't mean that, hey, we're doing a criminal investigation. You need to know this. You should be advised of your rights. None of that was ever said. They don't tell the White House counsel, hey, the National Security Advisor, we're going to sit down with him in the White House and talk about Russia. And we think he may have committed a crime here. So we're going to let you know that so you can protect his rights. Nope, never happens. And by the way, Michael Flynn was never charged with anything regarding Russia. Anything. His charge is lying to the FBI agents at that January meeting. If the goal is to set a legal trap, the Wall Street Journal writes, it worked. The two agents showed up at the White House, and they reported in the 302 that General Flynn had been relaxed and jocular and clearly saw the FBI agents as allies. One of the agents was Peter Strzok, who was famous for his anti-Trump text to his gumata, Lisa Page. By the way, I took liberties with both his name and the way that they describe Lisa Page in the Wall Street Journal editorial. The FBI agents had seen transcripts of Mr. Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador that were unmasked by Obama administration officials. The 302 says that rather than flag this and ask Mr. Flynn for an explanation, the FBI agents decided before the meeting that if Flynn said he did not remember something they knew he said, they would use the exact words Flynn used to try to refresh his recollection. If Flynn still would not confirm what he said, they would not confront him or talk him through it. Keep in mind, The FBI's counterintelligence probe into Russia and the Trump campaign was still secret. Mr. Flynn had done nothing wrong in conversing with the Russian ambassador. It was part of his job, and he had no reason to believe he was in legal jeopardy. He initially claimed he misremembered what was discussed, which is more believable than that a highly decorated official would lie to the FBI and agree to see them without counsel, lie to them about a meeting of which he had absolutely 100% business to be doing. In other words, talking to Sergei Kislyak, 100% above board having that meeting. There's no reason why Michael Flynn would lie about it. None. Zero. He says he misremembered. But again, why would he lie? He's the incoming National Security Agency. He's talking to a counterpart in Russia. What's the problem with that? Nothing. Mr. Flynn's lawyers are requesting probation and community service, though the facts suggest the judge should question the entire plea deal. Mr. McCabe and Strozak have both been fired for misconduct, and their behavior reeks of entrapment. This is an absolute abuse of Michael Flynn's civil liberties. Where the hell is the ACLU today? Where are all the fake, phony civil libertarians out there? Where are they? This guy was trapped. They entrapped him. And Comey, that megalomaniac, this guy, he was the one who said, oh, it's my idea to do this. I sent the FBI agents to the White House, and even though it was protocol to let the White House know, I told them not to. Because I didn't want them to be alerted. I took advantage of the fact that we're a new administration. We have seen so many violations of civil liberties by the FBI. We have seen so many violations of civil liberties by the Obama Justice Department. And it continued. It continued after Trump became president because the same people were there. Strozak, McCabe, Comey, they were all there. They abused the Fourth Amendment. They abused the FISA court. They abused wiretapping. They abused all of it. And then they entrapped the national security advisor in the White House. You know, it's just, it's amazing to me that the only person out there talking about how dangerous this is Alan Dershowitz. Really, because honestly, any true civil libertarian out there today should talk about, isn't it dangerous to have one part of the executive branch of government entrap another part of the executive branch of government without the boss, the president, knowing what's going on? Don't you think it's problematic for our system of justice here? And if you are going to tell him that they're looking into a potential crime, then why would you not advise him to have an attorney present, which is his constitutional right? And you're part of the executive branch of government where your job is to take care that the laws and the Constitution are faithfully taken care of. And you took an oath to ensure the Constitution was protected. Some guy on Twitter asked me today, no, they don't take an oath to the president. They take an oath to the Constitution. Well, guess what? The Constitution's pretty clear that you have a right to counsel. What they did to Michael Flynn was unconscionable. And all they got him on was lying to the FBI when he's the national security advisor and they asked him about a conversation and he misremembered. When he had 100% reason to have that conversation. And who the hell are these FBI agents asking the National Security Advisor anything, by the way? James Clapper lied to Congress under oath. As the head of the whatever he was, CIA, NSA, it's irrelevant. The point is that he was in a position, much like Michael Flynn, where he was entitled to secrecy and entitled to keep things hidden from the public view. Unlike Flynn, Clapper was under oath before Congress when he lied when asked by Senator Ron Wyden, do you spy on the American people? He said, no, sir. That was a lie. He admitted it was a lie, but he said it was the best, it was the least lie I could think of at the time or something like that. Admitted it was a lie. Never charged with perjury, even though he was under oath, even though it was a separate branch of government doing the oversight required of the Constitution. Ah. But we liked Clapper, right? Not me. I hate the guy. But we, the left and the media, we like the guy. So it's fine. Fine for him to lie. But we don't like Flynn. Even though what Clapper lied about was a violation of everybody's civil liberties in this country. And Flynn lied about a meeting which he was perfectly entitled to have. Ah, it's pathetic. The violation of the FISA court, the violation of the Constitution, the violation of just basic freaking common sense by the Justice Department under James Comey. And he's taking credit for it today. And we're the ones who are supposedly saying now that the crimes have been committed. No, the crimes were committed. the egregious, absolute destruction of civil liberties by the previous administration and their FBI goons who were still there afterwards. And by the way, I want to ask another question, too. I thought we were supposed to be working on our language now in this post-day and age. We're all supposed to be working on our tone and our language and supposed to be using kinder, gentler words. Chuck Schumer describes the president now doing something that's pretty violent to me. I don't know. Maybe this will motivate somebody to commit violence. I'm not sure. Why don't we take a listen to that, shall we?
Payne pledge to fire up his base. President Trump made clear he'll hold parts of the government hostage for a petty campaign pledge to fire up his base.
Got it? He's holding it hostage. So that's the good rhetoric. And then there's MSNBC's Donnie Deutsch. Also using great rhetoric here, the kind that will unite the nation and keep everybody, including cancer patients now, not offended by any of this. Cut two.
If you think back about a year ago, and you describe brand attributes, those are the words we use to describe brand, you would have said strong, authoritative, in charge, you know, nasty, intimidating. And now when you look at him, and as each day goes by, starting particularly with the election, you see him as kind of pathetic and defanged and confused and goofy. It's the first time in his life he's not dealing from strength. And you see it, and he's vulnerable, and he's weak, and there's a quality to him, and there's almost, it feels like a confused quality to him. And I as there continues to be, there will be nobody around him of any consequence, and even when there has been people around him with consequence, it doesn't matter. And he's gone from malignant to benign. I mean, that's the best way. To me, he was always a cancer, and he's gone from a malignant cancer to a benign cancer. The cancer's still there, but he does not have the toxic effect. He does not have the ability to impact. He does not have the ability to force his wall through. He does not have the ability to force his will on anything. And I think the weaker he seems and the weaker he is in reality, the more the circus is going to take on a surreal tone.
Now, remember something, though. The real cancer is on the Constitution, the civil liberties abuse, but they don't mention any of that because they don't really care, do they? Also, it's offensive to cancer patients. You know, I heard an ad today from Cherry Hill Volvo, our buddy Judith Krepnik, that Amazon will deliver your packages right to your Volvo. They have this technology, the thing where they'll open the trunk and put it right in the trunk. Isn't that cool? Very, very cool. Isn't that neat?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's the kind of technology I'm talking about right
there. I love
there.
Technology. It's my favorite thing ever.
Because people steal Amazon packages. There's a story today, the police in Jersey are they're doing stakeouts, Rasa. They put fake packages out, and they wait for people to come. I think the Philly cops did this as well. And they wait for people to steal them, and then they swoop down and grab them.
Oh, well, it's up in Jersey City. They put GPSs in some of the fake boxes.
That's awesome. I love that.
Apparently, it, like 3 minutes, and they put the word out that they're doing it. I mean, it's not like a secret.
Right.
And so 3 minutes after they put one of the packages out, it was somebody just rolled right over and picked it up.
And grabbed it.
3 minutes later.
Porch pirates, they're called.
Yeah.
Porch pirates. The Jersey City Police Chief Michael Kelly said most of the package thefts we've made arrests on revolve around closed circuit TV or private surveillance cameras that give us a still image. With the bait packages, some will be under video surveillance and some will have GPS. Amazon said the following: we appreciate the increased effort by law enforcement to tackle package theft and remain committed to assisting however we can. Porch pirates have become a growing problem. Do they wear patches on their eyes, you think, Rosso, or have hooks or anything like that?
The hooks might damage the boxes.
Imagine if you had a pirate on your shoulder, like old school. That's how they know you're a porch pirate. Big old pirate.
A parrot, you mean.
Parrot?
Yeah, a pirate parrot.
Pirate parrot. On your shoulder. Bottle of rum in your hand.
Arr.
Awesome. Arr! Get the prime boxes, boys! Anyway, that's good, though, because I nothing bugs me more than when packages go missing, you know?
Has this happened to you, sir?
No, but I had Amazon packages that were never delivered, and I call Amazon about it. They go, "Oh, they're still on their way. We're sorry. We promised you they'd be there in 2 days. We don't know where they are. They just disappear."
Wait a minute. There's no tracking number. I mean,
stuff disappears. Yeah, I'm telling you right now, it just vanishes. And they don't know where the packages go. Then they finally come back to you and they go, "The package is lost." Mm. Just lost. Psh, goes away. Poof, thin air.
We put it on the truck, but now I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I know what happened. It fell off the back of the truck is what happened in the Pine Barrens. That's what happens, you see. Let me tell you this, too. Governor Murphy, you know, New Jersey governor, right? Your governor?
Our governor. Governor.
Well, he's going on a vacation, Rasa. He's a man of the people. 12-day safari to Africa for the holidays.
Just like you and me.
You know, when I want to see animals, I go to the zoo. Or maybe I do that safari at Great Adventure, you know, where the monkeys come out to your car and a baboon sits on your trunk or something. No, the Murphys are going to Tanzania. Christmas in Tanzania. I'm sure that'll cost very, very minimal for the security and the travel and everything else.
And all the shots they have to get.
Right, the shots, yes.
And you're only allowed to bring like 33 pounds of anything.
I'm sure that with the governor of New Jersey is probably an exception for that, since he'll have like his security team around him and everything else. His 11-day trip to Italy in July, where he owns a $7.3 million 23-room mansion. During that vacation, the administration initially refused to say where the governor planned to go after notifying reporters he'd be out of state. Then they confirmed his whereabouts 4 days after he left, when he took a United Airlines flight to Italy, and they caught him on the plane. Hey, New Jersey! Hey, Africa! How you doing? Good to see you. I want to see some baboons. So Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver will serve as the acting governor while he's away. So there you go.
We should start a GoFundMe page to keep him over there.
We should do that, right?
Yeah.
Sid asks, did you ever get your Tesla money back? Nope, Tesla sucks. I'm telling you, they are a dishonest company. I have been asking them for 6 months to return my deposit.
Why do I not know this story?
I talked about it. Maybe you were gone.
Oh, yeah.
Tesla will not give people back their money. I'm telling you, I'm going to do a whole thing on this when I get back, because there are lots of people out there, sometimes have to wait a year to get their $1,000 deposit back.
Oh, my God.
They are a bunch of crooks.
Oh, man.
And I'm telling you, man, every time you reach out to them, they go, we're working on it. I think Tesla is in really bad financial straits, because why would they not be able to return $1,000 to somebody, right?
That's in my opinion, that's criminal, but, you know.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too. I think Elon Musk should be in jail. I do.
Oh, that is awful, dude.
And I sent them a note on Twitter, too. I sent them a message, and I'll tell you what I said to them, too. And then somebody mysteriously got back to me and said, oh, reach out to me. We'll work on your refund. And I call up, and they say, go online and deal with your account, and then they hang up on you. So Tesla, they're doing this to a lot of people, by the way. And I sent them a note. I said, hi, I'm going to talk about this on my show. I requested my refund 6 months ago and still have not received it. I know a lot of people have also had similar complaints. You're welcome to contact me or my producer. Nope. Nah. Nah. Maybe I have to go to the moon to get it. Isn't that Elon Musk doing that now? You got to go to the moon? Jerk.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I will never buy a Tesla now. Never.
Oh,
are you kidding me?
You.
No way would I buy a Tesla now.
You said 6 months?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
6 months for a deposit.
God.
You know, if a local car dealership did that, they would be in jail.
Yes, 100%.
They'd be in jail.
100%.
Any company that takes your money and says you have an absolute guaranteed refund, you know, and then they don't give you your money back, you got to go fight them for it.
Yep.
But, you know, that's what I'm done. Never again.
They have all kinds of money that they can just say, Now,
I'm going to get a Volvo, I decided. It's a great family car. That's
absolutely
what I'm going to do.
Absolutely.
I'm going to have my Amazon packages delivered right to my trunk. That's what I'm going to do.
Screw the Tesla.
Yeah. Tesla can kiss my ass is what Tesla can do.
I don't blame you. That's awful.
Yeah. And they can do it to me. They do it to anybody. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, because you have just a little bit of a mouthpiece on this.
A little bit, right?
Yeah, really.
We're
going to
talk more about
this.
We're going to talk a lot more about this, by the way.
Oh, boy. Tesla, you know, messed with the wrong person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I will make sure
the wrong word there.
Nobody
Sorry.
Should buy their cars. I'm telling you right now. I mean, buy them if you want to. But then if you change your mind, you just know you're going to have to fight like hell to get your refund back. Get your, you know, your refund. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I told them I was going to talk about this. They never contacted me, so I guess they don't care.
No.
They don't care what my opinions are. It's a scam is what it is. It's a scam. You know what it is? I guess they have to show that they have a lot of money right
of
now
course.
For their investors, maybe year end. And then, you know, they return. Because a lot of people have canceled their deposits. A lot of people have canceled.
Look,
because the cars don't get built in time. That's why.
It's awful.
Anyway, we'll talk more about this. Don't you worry. American University. Their students and staff call for minority-only spaces on campus to promote inclusion. This is from Breitbart. What do you call it when only people of a certain race are allowed to go someplace? What do you call that? There's a word for it.
Inclusion? No. I'm sorry.
No, there's another word I'm thinking of. Another word. How about segregation?
Yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
Right, yeah. Whites over here, blacks over here. It used to be called segregation. We fought against that. Now at American University, they want to have minority-only students of color places where you can only be a student of color to go there and hang out. So that's called progress right there, kids.
This is what we fought for.
Yeah, Dr. King, this is exactly what he wanted. Oh, now, also in New Jersey today, there was a cash spill. Did you hear about this?
Yes. It's up in East Rutherford.
This is amazing. Now, I guess it was like a Brinks truck or something like that. Yeah. An armored truck crashed, spilling cash all on the highway.
It happened on Route 3. Nobody was hurt.
And something?
Not in that, but then there were a whole bunch of other crashes.
Wow.
Because people are abandoning their cars to
go
run out
chase
and pick
the cash.
Up.
Yes. That's exactly right.
Yes, it was insane.
The only proper response to that is, oh, look, a Brinks truck turned over. Go get the cash, kids. Go get the cash. Man, I wonder if any Tesla money was in that Brinks truck.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Now, Nancy Pelosi, her blood red coat is making a comeback. Are you familiar with the blood red coat, Rasa?
Everybody wants it. It's going to sell out. Are you kidding me? There's going to be knockoffs. It's going to be like the coat of the season, I'm telling you.
Do you know why it's called the blood red coat, Rasa?
I'm not entirely sure, Rich, but I bet you know.
Well, maybe I'll tell you after the news.
Okay.
Actually, Tom is in Murdertown, Delaware. Hey, what's up, Tom?
Hey, Rich. Good man. As we speak, my wife wants to get a Tesla, and that deal just got stopped in its tracks.
There you go. There
I
you go.
Sleep on the couch. Actually, she'll sleep on the couch. I'm not sleeping anywhere. I'm big and smelly. I'm kidding. I got you, buddy. That's done.
I just don't understand a company's business practices like that. I emailed them again yesterday and go, can I just please have my refund back? It's been 6 months. I don't even get a response.
Nothing.
So,
nothing.
You know.
I got a lady in the office like that. She's tenured or something. I don't know. You're a blessing, Rich. You guys are awesome.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it, Tom. Thank you, buddy. You're not big and smelly anyway. You smell great. The whole Zeoli Army smells great.
Like freshly mown grass.
Thank you, Rasa. Very, very good. Let me just say, California is proposing a plan to tax text messages because, well, nothing is really left but text messages to tax. So, yeah, California. And, of course, as we know, what starts out in nutty California will soon come to the East Coast. Today we found out millions and millions and millions of dollars of soda tax money in Philadelphia was not spent. Shocking. Here's something else, too, for you today. It'll cost $1 million to tear down the failed baseball stadium in Camden, built with $21 million of taxpayer funds. Add another $16 million to the money pit formerly known as Campbell's Field on the Camden waterfront. The Camden County Improvement Authority approved a nearly $1 million contract this month to tear down the 17-year-old Field of Dreams. It was built with $21 million in public dollars thrown after a fad of independent minor league baseball stadiums came around. They said it would turn the city around. After the demolition, Rutgers, Camden, and Camden City are expected to pony up $15 million, $7.5 million apiece, to develop the area into a complex of sports fields for the university's Division II, Division III sports teams and the city recreation department. Another $155,000 also included to the $1 million demolition contract awarded to the R.E. Pearson Construction Company to dig up irrigation and drainage lines at the former 6,400-seat ballpark. This is from NJ.com. So there you go. Your tax dollars at work. Investments. The goal in 2001 was to make the Camden waterfront a destination and help fuel the resurgence of a once-proud blue-collar cousin of Philadelphia. At a groundbreaking in 1999, Governor Christy Whitman, an absolute disgrace, said the partners behind the investment have heard the message from the movie Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. Public records show about $21 million was spent through a combination of direct loans and bonds floated through a private bank to build the stadium. The State Economic Development Authority issued a $7 million bond through Santander Bank, which was known then as Sovereign Bank, along with a direct loan of $2 million. That was added to the $6.5 million loan from the Delaware River Port Authority, because you know your tolls go towards economic redevelopment, kids. $2 million from Rutgers, the State University, taxpayer-funded, and $3.7 million in equity financing obtained by the builder. The Economic Development Authority kicked in an additional $1.2 million for upkeep of the already debt-strapped stadium in 2004, just 3 years after it opened. In 2015, the Camden River Sharks folded under a pile of debt. Camden County stepped in to purchase the property in 2015 to save it from foreclosure and settle the litigation by paying $3.5 million to pay off the outstanding debt. They negotiated a ticket surcharge with the River Sharks that would span 15 years to get back a fraction of the money they were owed. But 4 months later, the team folded after just one payment. So there you go. Despite the promise that no taxpayer funds would be used to pay down the debt, the Camden County Improvement Authority has been subsidizing a $300,000 annual debt payment through its budget. Delaware River Port Authority borrowing for projects around the Philadelphia region, including Campbell's Field, led to a $1 toll increase at the bridges and still makes up about 10% of the agency's debt. They no longer finance economic development projects. Yes, yeah. Unfortunately, the state, in its lack of wisdom, built a baseball stadium for an unaffiliated independent league that folded and $35 million disappeared, said South Jersey political power broker George Norcross III last year. Anyway, just wanted you to know your taxpayer dollars at work right there. Greg, can we try to get Ron Paul on the show? Former Congressman Ron Paul. He's got a piece today at Reason, Marijuana federalism time has come. Congress should make sure the next attorney general respects states' authority to set their own marijuana policy. I'd love to talk to Ron Paul.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Don't sound too enthusiastic about it, Greg. All right, let's do it.
Who won Twitter?
I'm going to give it to Serendipity. She says, Rich, the difference between you and some other radio personalities who talk politics is that you make it look easy and good. I'm getting a better education listening to you than I ever got from either college or YouTube. Glad to be a part of the hashtag Zeoli Army.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, congratulations. And Flemington Furs sponsors Who Won Twitter. And we're grateful for that because Flemington Furs is what fabulous feels like. But can I also give a Who Won Twitter nomination?
It's your show.
All right. Thank you. Pierce Hansen.
Okay.
He says, Rich, I just gave blood at the company blood drive. I asked the attendant, is this going to be the vampiric one? Is this going to be for the vampiric one, Nancy Pelosi? Someone overheard me and started laughing and said, Zeoli Army too?
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. The Zeoli Army's everywhere right
awesome.
There. So, Pierce, congratulations. You also win Twitter today. Special trophy edition.
Nice.
Host prerogative right there.
Zeoli 3 to 6. Talk radio 1210 WPHD.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.